You're listening to the Rogers Sporting Goods Podcast with Patrick Fisher,
Chandler Smith,
and Josh from Outdoor Limits.
In this podcast, we'll touch on everything from gear to ducks to deer, turkey and fishing, from field to table. Let's dive in.
Welcome back for another edition of Pat's Fantastic Panfish News, or in this case, what the buck is going on?
Yep. I like it.
So, recent news, well, not recent, started last November. If you've been paying attention to this, gentleman in Ohio, resident C.J. Alexander, or if you've been paying attention, the C.J. Alexander buck. So, basically, a little bit of background. He harvests a giant, a world-class deer with a crossbow. States he shot it at his sister's property. You're taking all the pictures. He actually did. So I got the update from Outdoor Life. He actually did interviews. He's, you know, posting pictures, all that. Well, when you shoot a buck of that magnitude, as we all know, it gets passed around everywhere.
Yeah.
And now there's scrutiny, and they're going to look into it. Because in this case, this would have potentially been the number one buck in Ohio, and like the number three world record. So which would have been behind Milo Hansen. And if you go way back, we had Dustin Huff in here
talking about his,
which is number two.
Yep. United States record.
Yeah. And even when he shot his with a crossbow, obviously they look into it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a big deal. So,
yeah,
you know, oh, did he poach it? Did he not? So they opened up an investigation.
It was cool. If you haven't listened to that podcast, you can go back and find it. I don't know if Hayden knows the title name, because he just went through all those podcasts recently. But they do talk about, like, they, like, interrogated the landowner. And the landowner's like, yeah, Dustin has all the rights to be on this property.
Oh, yeah. Right? They're going to question everybody.
Yeah. And they went through everything. And then they, you know, time of death, you know, all this stuff. Like, just they went through it all.
For sure.
And I think he talked about, like, someone told him, like, immediately call and just get this out of the way.
Yeah, you might as well make the call.
Yeah. Like, they're going to be there anyways. Might as well just say, like, hey, come over here. Look at this deer. This is where I shot it and all this stuff.
If you're shooting potential world records, you make two calls. One, you can call your buddy or your dad, be like, hey, I'm going to need some help.
Yeah.
And then two is the DNR. Whoever your local agent is, get a hold of them right away.
Yeah.
Because then they can come out. It's fresh.
Yeah.
They can see exactly what's going on, and you can get ahead of it, because you wait a week, then it trickles out, and then it's just harder for them to investigate.
They're looking for gut piles. They're going to look for blood. They're going to
check your shell casings, or in this case, the crossbow bolts. They're going to everything, timelines. They open up an investigation. They're going to get warrants for your phone records and see if you're talking to people. And anyway, so this guy,
real comes quick. Out.
Yeah.
It was episode 38 called the Huff Buck.
The Huff Buck.
Yep. Easy to find.
And then, I don't know, as Pat keeps talking, Hayden, are you able to find a picture of the deer that we're talking about?
Yeah, I can look.
Yeah. Go ahead,
Pat. C.J. Alexander Buck. Easy to see.
You can go to Google Images and find it.
Yep. So comes out. He just got indicted yesterday on 23 criminal charges. So they opened up an investigation basically around December. So a month later after the kill.
Yep.
Word gets out. They start hearing rumors of this and that. They open up an investigation. Those charges include hunting without written permission, hunting without a license, tampering with evidence, jacklighting or spotlighting, theft, and then a whole list of other ones.
Jeez.
So you need written permission?
Well, he did in this case, so I'll get to that. So he says he shot it on his sister's property.
Okay.
Through the investigation, they find out he didn't shoot it on his sister's property. He shot it on a piece of private land about 10 miles away. So he needed permission, written through tech, whatever.
He needed permission from the landowner.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
That's why.
Because I've hunted without written permission before. Yeah. I've had the farmer say, yeah, obviously. Go ahead, go hunt.
So like TV the farm.
Okay. TV's not plugged in, I don't think.
Oh, okay. No.
I won't be able to pull it up.
Never mind.
But
no biggie. We can put it in later. So like the farm I hunt on.
Yeah.
I don't have like some written contract agreement.
But if somebody asked the landowner, can Pat hunt here? They'd say, yeah. Pat,
exactly. Pat. It's a verbal agreement. Gotcha. I ask every spring and every fall. I just do my due diligence. You never know.
Well, I was just making sure I wasn't breaking the law by not getting written permission.
I think they're just saying in general, like, hey, there was no agreement whatsoever.
Yeah. Trespassing.
So he harvests the steer with a crossbow. So what happens is through the investigation, they found out he harvested it 10 miles away. Not on his sister's, but on private land. And then he had the help of two of his friends, two gentlemen, help him stage that kill at his sister's. So they knowingly now are involved. Both of them got charged because they're taking the deer, illegally harvested, moving it to their sister's, which the sister also gets charged.
Jeez.
Because she's helping.
She knew about it.
Cover up this deal. Yeah. Now, granted, these are all indictments. So they'll start doing, he's lawyered up now for good reason.
So how proven are all these things? Like,
well, pretty proven. I mean, if you're throwing out 23 federal indictments, you feel pretty good as the state.
Yeah.
That something's going to happen. And there was rumors of this anyways. So now that this has happened, something's going to come of it.
Yeah.
Typically, here's what I say. Here's what I see. When they throw out 23 charges, they're throwing the whole book at you. Because as soon as he lawyers up, and I'm guessing the litigation, he's not going to get charged with all 23.
Yeah.
But out of those 23, some of those are going to stick. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this was interesting. Well, one, the deer was given a green score of 206 7/8 and a gross non-typical score of 235 7/8. And here's why that's a key factor. Because under the Ohio revised code, any deer over 125 inches, you have to pay a special restitution fee in addition to any restitution value established in the division rule. So because this deer was so big, under the algorithm, and I didn't write it down, but basically it's your gross non-typical, in this case 235 7/8 minus 100 squared times $1.65.
Jeez.
That puts his additional fine at $30,462.33 if convicted.
So that's a fine that you have to pay because you poached that deer?
Yeah.
It's like a price per inch.
It's on top of, yeah.
It's a price per inch. So yeah. He shot a monster. It's going to be a monster fine. But
it will make sense.
It will be interesting. I mean, we've talked about it, but like, I mean, I guess I won't go too far into it. I'm not going to disparage him yet. Obviously, he still has to be convicted, but I mean, poaching and just like, come on.
No license, what all that do? Stuff.
Yeah, no license. And I don't know why they would charge him with hunting without a license, like indict him if they knew he didn't have one.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems like a pretty, just that there, like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Anyways, and this just moreover goes to what I say about, you know, we already have our backs against the wall when it comes to hunting and just the whole, you know, hunters versus non-hunters and the not killing of animals. And then when you have someone go do something like this, it's just another bad thing to, you know, go against us. But anyways, it will be something to keep an eye out on. So only one bit of news this week, but it will be interesting. In the outdoor world, it was pretty big news. So, but other than that, Now, back to Josh with the jug report.
We're turning this into a little news show,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah, right, yeah.
So I've been...
We'll have a green screen. You're yeah. like, you're
and
out
over
there.
Here, like the weather.
Yeah, but
we'll
you're
just
out
lay
on the
YouTube
water.
Video over top.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be great.
You're fake floating on a boat.
Yeah. What if, though? What if we made that?
Be pretty sweet.
We could, like, change the like, background yeah. to the podcast. So we could be, like, in the duck blind.
I didn't get it get out too much. So I had graduation at MU this weekend for my daughter. So shout out to Megan for that. I'm going to do a quick shout out.
Graduated huh?
with her bachelor's degree and then got a honors college graduation. And so not much outdoor activity for me.
Awesome.
So, and then we had the inventory on Monday. So,
oh yeah,
not much for me going on. So I was recouping yesterday, but sounds like Josh got to get out. So tell
yeah.
us about this little fun time
well,
you had
the
or where
the
was.
Crappie bite has been fantastic.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I've been catching the snot out of crappie.
Well,
and I've
Josh's,
been hearing up and down reports on that.
Yeah. You just got to find them. You got to know how to find them.
That's true.
The general right now for us is that everybody's trying to go to the bank and catch the fish on the spawn, and that's got jacked up.
It's
and
not
ruined.
Happening. I'm catching fish in 20 foot of water.
He's that's catching fish in 20 foot of water.
Yeah.
Water levels have gone up, most likely, at where you're fishing too, right?
Yeah. Well, one of the reservoirs is up 17 feet.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's messed up a lot of this shallow water crappie spawn stuff yeah. for us. So
I think they spawned a little bit, and then the rains came, and it just killed it.
Pushed it deeper, and then they're, you know.
Which then makes it hard, like, for me, but if you're Ooh. Trying to find fish in the 20-foot, you know, they're not there on the bank, you know, it makes it more difficult. And the catch is down. You gotta have a way to get on the water. If you mm-hmm. don't have a good fish finder or a fish finder in general, you're just, hey,
dipping
let's
trees.
Try to go here. Let's try to go here.
Yeah.
And you're trying to find them.
So we'll talk crappie just a second because it's been a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Getting to play with the new boat, the new electronics, and, you know, getting into the whole fishing thing again. I used to be really into fishing, and there was a time where I just didn't enjoy it as much because I didn't have the boat to really...
It does make it.
It makes it a lot easier to get out when you got a nice boat to, like,
money might find not buy happiness, but it will buy a boat, which yeah. brings happiness.
That's a fact.
So
that's why I've got six boats.
Yeah. If you don't know, Josh just recently got a new Sea Ark.
Yeah.
It's going to be his fishing waterfowl boat.
It's pretty sweet.
It's dual purpose.
Dual purpose.
That's right.
Yeah. So, anyways, crappie fishing. It's been really fun getting to learn how to use the electronics. I set up a screen when I'm looking for the fish. I set up a down scan, and on the right side is the right side of the side scan, and the left side of it is the left side of the side scan. So I'm looking at down and left and right as I'm idling, looking for fish. And so when I see a tree covered in fish, I just pop a waypoint on the map and circle back to it and throw the forward-facing sonar down and get after it.
Getting on it.
It's yeah. a lot of fun.
But so yeah. you got some videos coming out?
Oh, yeah.
Of all that stuff?
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of fishing videos coming.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
I'm excited. We got to go catfishing.
We do.
He's
I did that yesterday.
Josh from the Outer Limits.
The Outer?
Outer Banks?
Yeah. Getting out there.
Anywho, yesterday I did some jug fishing.
Mm.
I've been wanting to jug fish for... a while.
Okay.
I just haven't done it. I haven't really, I mean, shoot, I just got the boat like 2 weeks ago. So
yeah,
been focused on the crappie fishing. But then yesterday I was like, you know what? I'm going to get the jugs. We're going to go catch some catfish. And heck so yeah. I went to the store right last week or something. And got a few odds and ends, got a cast net. So now I can throw a cast net and catch some bait. But I tried that and didn't catch anything. I think the bait's a little bit deep right now.
Yeah,
so
makes sense.
I'm glad that I thought to bring other types of baits. So I had a can of night crawlers and I brought hot dogs.
Oh yeah.
Ooh,
There's no better fishing bait than a hot dog.
Some Franks.
It'll work.
You can catch anything in the lake on a hot dog.
Yeah.
So my jug lines, I've got them with 6 and 8-aught hooks. Just kind of depends on which jug it is.
Yeah.
It's a pool noodle with bank line. And then I've got 2 circle hooks and a 6-ounce weight. And so on those circle hooks, I just, you know, cut like an inch and a half piece of hot dog, threw it on that circle hook and tossed it out there in about 20 foot of water. Let them soak.
Nice.
And the cool thing was, is I got all the jugs set and I found a brush pile and started jigging crappie, caught a couple crappie, and I see my jug just going, just bouncing. And so I go over there and sure enough, there's a fish on it.
Dang.
And then nice. I set
it's
out.
So fun finding jugs like bouncing and ripping.
Especially if it's yours.
Yeah. Well, yeah. 100%. Especially if it's yours.
Good.
Yeah.
So when I was crappie fishing in the Ozarks, that trip we talked about, we were checking jugs.
Oh, that's right.
Morning, afternoon, and evening. We had about 20-something jugs out. And, I mean, we'd go out on the boat and check them, run the whole line. It's always fun to see one just immediately start disappearing when you're getting close with that motor. I also, while we were crappie fishing on kayaks, I went and checked two. I went and caught 2 fish off the jugs on the kayak, which is kind of fun. It's a little more chaotic. And it was probably like a 15-pounder I was wrestling.
Oh, wow.
I was wrestling off my kayak. It had some eggs. It was a big gut, you know, like big-bellied catfish. It's a nice size one. I'm over here in a kayak wrestling around. Like, I feel like I'm on Swamp People, you know, yelling, shoot him! Shoot him!
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I felt like. But that's
a lot of line to manage in a kayak.
It is.
Yeah.
It was fun, though.
How deep were you setting your jugs?
Man, I don't remember. What was the depth they had?
Because I just kind of guessed, and I think I got lucky.
I don't think they're that deep. I mean, as far as where the hook placement's at?
Yeah, just like what water, like how many feet of water were you dumping your jugs?
Oh, like, we were going in like the main channel. Like if we weren't in like 20 foot, I think that's where most, really? 20 or more.
Yeah, because I was on a deep flat.
Yeah.
Like a 25 to 30 foot of water flat. And then on the edges, it comes up kind of a moderate, you know, upslope. And so I set it on that upslope between the shallow and the deep flat, just kind of on that transition. That's kind of where I targeted.
But I didn't set them out. They set them out in the same kind of traditional line every, like in the channel every year.
They just knew where to put them.
Yeah. And so I just check them. But
you're not really doing jug lines shallow, under 10 feet.
I mean,
later in the year, you probably could.
Later you could. Or certain times of the year, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'd say that'd be here within like probably your bank a month.
Poles or whatever.
I mean, you can do bank poles too, but
yeah,
depending. I mean, down south, I think they do all of it, like limb lines, bank poles, all of it.
Make sure to check with your
local game and fish or whatever you can do.
Yeah.
You
know. Yeah, like in Kansas, there's only certain reservoirs you can run jugs, and you can only have 8 jugs. And there's a lot of rules
for different states, and then sometimes different conservation areas have their own set of rules.
Yep. So always check that. But yeah, jug lining, it was my first time doing it, and I'm definitely going to do it again.
Had success.
I got 3 catfish I went home with and 2 crappie.
I'll have to start giving you, if you wanted to chase channels, I guess I'll have to start giving you the inside scoop on the good baits.
Good baits.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I caught 1 on night crawlers on a hook and then 2 on hot dogs.
You know, those type of baits sound like, you know, the good old farm pond baits, you know. Under a bobber,
I would have
used a little treble hook in a hot dog. Man, that's what I mean. Everybody goes to the pond with that.
Oh yeah,
and then night crawlers too. But
dipping my stink bait,
I always find night crawlers. You end up catching whatever.
I caught a crappie on a jug too.
Yeah, so
I had to throw that one back. It was illegal to keep.
You know, but
makes sense. You got a pile of stuff here.
Oh yeah. Before we get into that stuff, I mean, that's like, we're getting the nerdy technical stuff. Pat, what do you use for catfish bait, or what have you used?
The times I have gone, so I grew up the pond, because we had this place that we could, it was like a farm pond, and it was notorious for catfish, so that's why you went to it. Gotcha. So we would do the treble hook, but it had the
little the sponge on it.
Sponge, yeah. Or it would have like that little like a plastic
tube with the holes. Yeah.
So you're using dip bait.
So we would dip it down and dip stink in bait, yeah. Get some on your hand.
Yeah. There you go. Smell real good.
And then we just, yeah, we'd throw it out there.
Gotcha. And then, how are you rigging it? Like on a, was it floating under a bobber or was it on the bottom?
Yeah, bobber.
On a bobber, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because we're just hanging out there, you know, so you throw it out there, have a bobber on there.
Yeah.
It is kind of like a...
It sounds like a great time.
I mean, it's really just hanging out.
You just hang out and fish.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, you're catching, you know, who knows. And then a couple times I've done down at Lake of the Ozarks, casting off the dock. We do some nighttime catfishing.
Yeah.
And I would just... And I'm not a cat fisherman, but I'd put the weight on the bottom and then I just have my circle hook, you know, maybe a foot or 2 feet above it, kind of floating off to the side above the weight, and just do like, you know, a chunk of something, either
hot dog cut livers, bait, shrimp, or like liver, the,
you know, cut
crawler.
Bait.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Scraps.
Literally anything.
Find, yeah. And just toss it out there. I think I've caught one doing it that way.
Yeah.
But we were down there. We would do these crappie tournaments for that area. And we'd do this big crappie tournament every year. And then at night, you know, you're just chilling. Everybody's sitting around on the dock. So you toss a pole out there just in case. But I never got huge into it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I never did the jugs thing. I don't know if we're building model airplanes here or what we're doing with this stuff. So
it's all, man, it's pretty sure. New to the market.
Like yeah. I don't, there's a lot to it, man.
I couldn't tell you how to rig that up or
what. You put the bait on this and put it on a line.
I'm a hook, throw some bait on there and
have
it sit around the bottom.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, I grew up doing all, you know, we never did a lot of jug lines in Texas when I was growing up. We did trot lines. That was the big thing. We set a trot line out on our dock. We set another trot line out, you know, in the trees.
So when you do a trot line, how do you like to set it up on a lake? Because I've done it in a pond. I'm just curious about, like, on a public lake. How would you?
Yeah. There's certain rules. Like, you look at your rules and regs, DNR. But you usually have to have it marked. With your name on it. So a lot of guys use like 2 liter bottles with their name on it that are floating that you can visually see.
So it's like those buoys for the deep end of a pool.
Yeah.
So it's kind pretty of marking.
Where and I don't know if you have to have one or two or whatever. And you just put it at the higher end. You basically just, you know, we go out and find two trees that are X amount of feet apart, you know, for however long we want to run it.
Yeah.
You know, and then you tie it up. Run it across, tie it up, and then you put your weights at certain areas. You might do two or three weights. We had bricks tied. That was our weights.
So you weigh down your trot line.
Yeah. We'd put a couple brick weights in the middle of that trot line.
Is it like doing a gang line for waterfowling?
Kind of.
I mean, sort of. We're using two trees.
Tipped upside down.
But then those bricks are pulling it down in the proper, you know, better depth, you know.
Okay. That makes sense. And then boat motors can go over top of
correct,
it.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, that's the part I was wondering, because when I've done a trot line, it's on a pond, and your line's just on the top of the
water.
You
just see the line, yeah. And so on the corners, you know, you put your bottle. We had a motor oil bottle was our name marker on it.
Oh, yeah.
And we'd fill it like 3/4 full of water. So the only thing above the water was like a quarter of the bottle, so nobody would see it and check it. We always thought that we'd have to kind of be a little
sneaky.
Sneaky.
Ow, I keep poking myself with this hook.
Sneaky snake.
But we would go out and like channel swings and just look at contours and look at the lake and set up trot lines and go. And that's a good way to bring in a good amount of fish. So
it's trot lining.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can use a lot of hooks on a trot line.
And it's fast to check a trot line over chasing a bunch of, you know, 33 jugs around.
Yeah. Missouri lets you use a lot of jugs.
Yeah.
In Kansas, you can only have 8 jugs.
But we would, you know, if we were going for channel catfish, we would do the blood bait packs, you know. We sell them, the little blood bait balls. And
I like the chicken liver ones.
Yeah. You know, and then we even got into making our own blood bait. My grandpa would go, to the butcher and get a 5 gallon bucket of blood, and then he would, there's a recipe, I don't know, I haven't looked it up.
But, oh yeah.
And then he would.
And who did this?
My grandpa.
Okay, because everybody's got a family member. Mine's my uncle. And he's got this bucket. He'll start doing it. And this year.
Is it his chum bucket? Or is it
his little bait bucket that mm-hmm. he makes his, you know, hey, this is the catfish bait.
Yeah, this is secret stuff. Oh, that's what you got to find out, Josh.
And I'm like, how many have you caught with that?
Oh, yeah.
You know? So, and he's either exaggerating or he just thinks he's making the best bait known to man.
Yeah, my grandpa's got three, and I'll go into that. So the blood bait, there's a special way of making it, and you basically just need sun and some maybe other materials to give it that doughy feel to it. I don't know what the materials were. I don't know if it was flour. Baking some flour or something like that, but he would mix this together into like a Play-Doh soft putty, but then he'd let it bake in the sun for a little bit, and it would become like the perfect blood bait.
Like a dip bait or a dough bait?
It would be a dough is what he was going for. Okay. So there's that. And then he also had his cheese bait, which was in a 5 gallon bucket, and they mixed in cotton with the cheese bait. And I don't know if it's actual cheese in there or not. It just smells like death.
But, yeah, I had a bait like that once where you just like shove your treble hook in there and it's got all these fibers
and stuff.
Sticks to the hook. Yeah, that's awesome bait.
And that was locally grown too, so that's 5 gallon bucket he would go buy from the guy down the street.
It's organic cheese.
So we'd have these painter sticks.
Yep.
And then you stick your treble hook in that and you just shove the painter stick down as far as you can go. When you pull it out, all those fibers keep like a mess on your treble hook.
Oh yeah, and it smells disgusting.
And if you want to get really good, you can put on a glove and grab it and like mold it around there. Yeah. And then we have the chum bucket, which is the worst. And that's a 5 gallon bucket with water and corn out in the Texas heat all year round.
Oh yeah,
and called moonshine,
and it smells terrible. Yeah. And it becomes milky water. And we would go out on our boat and chum with that, and then drop our cheese bait down on treble hooks to the bottom and tight line them. We catch blue cats and channel cats like crazy, and it was just a blast.
So chumming's a way to go, huh?
Well, we had a boat, and we weren't casting out. We were straight drop line and treble hooks. Just the way we did it, I guess. Mm-hmm. And we would go out and tie between two trees and chum the waters around it, smell terrible, and then drop our cheese baits down to the bottom, reel up a couple, two clicks, and then sit. And all of a sudden, you get the bite.
How many times as a kid did you guys, I don't know, maybe adults do this too, but the dough baits in the packages?
Oh, yeah.
No, you got to find the one in the back because the ones up front always get smushed.
Yeah.
Everybody always
squeezes them and messes with them, yeah.
Yeah, and then you just have a sheet of Play-Doh in there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, Josh. You still do it, probably.
No, never have. I've never seen that.
You know what I'm talking about, though, right?
Yeah.
The little dough bait
balls. People squish them?
Well, yeah, kids can't help it. It's like, oh, look at this dough.
Yeah, so.
Squeeze it flat. Please don't do that at our store.
So one time, Derek in the call center, we've been working here the same amount of time. We were down in Lake Fork, Texas, bass fishing and doing a little bit of trot lining and stuff at the same time. We went to go check this trot line, and these trot lines were old and they weren't pristine at all. You know, they're just, you know,
a little frayed.
I mean, yeah, they were yellowed. You know, it used to be a white line. Now it's like a golden ivory or something. It's things are getting old. And we went and checked this line, and we were using blood bait initially. We were going for channel cats because flatheads really won't mess with that stuff. They're after live, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're checking this line. We're taking fish off about every other hook, and then Derek goes, I think there's a big one on the end of this. And then all of a sudden, you see the water at the end of the trot line turn into like pure glass. Like, it's like a windy day, mm-hmm. but then the top of the water becomes, like, super, like a huge circle, just super slick. Looked like an oil slick for a second.
Mm.
Yeah, I was like, that's a big fish. But I was like, well, don't get messed up, tangled up. Let's just keep going. We'll get to it when we get to it. Well, he was upset. He's like, he just wanted to go to that fish and get it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we probably should have done that.
Oh,
it was on my bad. No, it didn't get off. But as we're getting close to it, that fish was so big, it snapped the trout line.
Yeah.
So now Derek is holding onto a line with hooks every 3 or 4 feet yeah. and just a catfish on the other end, just straight up fighting it barehanded. It was pure chaos.
Did you get the fish?
We did get the fish. No one got stuck with a hook, pulled it up, and what had happened is this catfish had eaten another catfish that was on the that was a channel cat that was on the trot line was eaten by this catfish. This catfish weighed 56 pounds.
It's a big fish.
Yeah. It was like his all I could do was to pick it up and hold it with my two arms, you know, straight up. And all, it was huge. But, yeah, it snapped the trot line. It ate, had eaten another fish that was on the trot line. Hmm. So, big old flathead. It was a fun story. We were driving back to the dock, passing these bass fishing guys, and we lift this thing over the boat.
Yeah.
They're all pointing at us and stuff. I was like 17, 18, 16. Showing I don't know.
The catfish.
Yeah.
Have you ever noodled?
No, I've never noodled. Are you going to do it, Josh?
No, I'm out.
You're out?
I don't want to do that. I'd rather catch them with a hook.
I'd try it. But I do like fighting fish on a rod and reel. Maybe, you know, I've done a lot of
bite fish with your
arm. The trot line and the jug fish for me are ways to get to a fish fry.
Correct.
For like 50 people or 30 people or 20.
Well, here's the thing about trot lines and jug lines, right? They are, you have a lot of hooks in the water. They're a passive way to fish. So you can go set your jug lines and then go target a different species, whether you want to just go catch bass for fun or catch crappie or, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
and you're still catching the groceries, but you're out having a good time at the same time.
Yeah.
Set them in the morning or something. Go check them that evening after you.
Even yesterday, what I was doing was I had all my jugs just sitting around me and I'm just jigging brush piles, catching crappie.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And I'm just constantly looking around and then you see this jug just bouncing.
But if someone said, "Hey, let's go stay up late at night and go catfish," and I'm like, "I'm bringing a rod,"
yeah,
and I'm doing it this way. That's what I prefer.
Yeah,
and that's how we get into all this mess that we're talking about.
Yep, there's just so many different ways to catch catfish.
You know,
what's your favorite one to catch? A channel cat, a blue cat, or a flathead?
I like flatheads.
I don't think I've caught anything other than a channel cat.
Yeah,
now I think. I mean,
I like them all, but you know, fishing a live bait. For a flathead.
Pull up a picture of all three of those for me.
All three of the what?
Species.
Oh, the species?
Yeah. I'd appreciate that.
There's a lot of different ways to catch them. Because, like, your channel cats are smaller, and they're going to be eating a lot of your dip baits and your stink baits and all that.
Other.
then your blues.
Trying to figure out if there's like
three main ones, though, people talk about.
Yeah, yeah. It's your blues, your channels.
Blue channel flat. And if you're on the eastern shore, there's a white one, too.
Hmm. Then your blue cats, they usually eat cut bait and
so this some must stink have been, bait stuff.
What you got?
We have all three here in Missouri.
Yes.
More than likely, yes.
Not as many blues, though, from that picture? Or I can't.
Yeah, it goes into Missouri. It's like, I think, like the Ozarks, you'd catch a blue, I imagine.
There's a lot of blues at Truman.
Is there?
Yeah.
Who you got? Someone caught a fish lately?
So this was a year ago today.
Oh, Facebook memory?
Me and Dad caught.
Yeah.
5 catfish fishing for crappie at Sailboat Cove. Minnows and a bobber.
Okay.
But those are going to be...
Channel?
That looks like a channel cat.
One on the left there.
That looks like a channel
probably
cat.
Channels.
Yeah, probably channel.
Do you know how to tell the difference?
Not like in a super scientific, biological way, like... What fin does what and things like that.
You can just tell by the way it is.
The colors, you know.
And channel cats are normally not that big. Like blue cats will exceed a channel cat by a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. So
the blue cats will have like this, you know, soft white and blue gray look to them.
Yeah. And channel cats will get those spots on them.
And channel cats will get some spots, but they have like that silver to amber green kind of.
Mud color.
Like gradient muddy kind of look to it. And then the flatheads are like the true, like they look like
those
a
like
mud bank.
You're catching them in the rivers?
Yeah.
In lakes.
In lakes.
Okay.
I know they prefer more live bait than
Which
the other
do
two.
Prefer? Is to there eat? One better eating over the other?
I think they're probably all good. There's some other. There's a lot of tricks down the line about cleaning them,
bleeding
too.
Bleeding them out.
Bleeding. A couple weeks ago when we were at the Ozarks, we'd bleed out all the catfish before we cleaned them. That type of stuff. And I know people that can take really big flatheads and put them in like stock pools for a couple days and let them kind of clean their, you know, clean out. But
dang, white catfish.
Yep. That's like a New York Eastern Shore thing.
Kind of resembles the, I don't know, it's a cross between a blue and a chino.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's probably still some more, like, subspecies.
Yeah, what was that thing we were looking at earlier?
It's like, yeah, it had, like,
this computer would work, but, or maybe I just got to go.
Right there. Oh, yeah, that channel, like all that.
Black bullhead, Mekong giant.
Bullheads can be catfish. Wells.
They're kind of, yeah. These are all over the world, probably.
Flathead, I hear that a lot.
Yeah, that's kind of a target species for a lot of catfish guys.
Yeah, these top three.
Flatheads. Flatheads and blues are normally what people target.
Yeah, 42 more.
Oh, my gosh.
They got a ghost. I mean,
ghost catfish, that's what I catch. None.
Yeah, you could get into the Mad Toms, too.
And those upside are
technically
down
catfish.
Yeah.
Are there Mad Toms on that list? Mad Toms are like 4-inch catfish.
Oh, yeah.
They're like little bitty guys.
Oh, a skunk corydoras.
Anyways.
Lots of subspecies, though.
Let's get into some rod and reel catfish stuff here. We've got a lot of... Last year was when this all came out for Rogers.
Yeah.
We got a pile of assorted tackle for you catfish guys out there. Some of it's pretty unique. Some of it's pretty standard.
Basic.
We got weights and we got hooks. So did we do a J hook or did we only do circle
hooks? We only got circle hooks at this current moment.
Okay. I thought we did a J hook, but I guess not.
Not for
ranging in sizes, I think from 6-aught to 10-aught.
That sounds about right.
Our circle hook selection, when we have got 10 packs and 25 packs. So if you're somebody rigging up jug lines,
and
you need a lot of hooks.
One heck of a deal.
Yeah, they're priced.
Let me see if I can find those.
And they're sharp. I stuck myself really good yesterday. But yeah, 25 packs of circle hooks.
I got it.
That'll get your jug lines all rigged up and ready to go. And then weights. We've got assorted egg weights. And we've also got what we have here on the table, which is our coated weights.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to talk about.
Colored.
So you see a lot of newer catfish guys, they all got their stuff. It's all colored. It's all got lime green, blaze orange, all that stuff going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to, I think we're the first ones to do it, but we've actually coated egg weights for catfishing. Yeah, it looks cool. I can say there's the benefit of this also is to take it easy on your rod mm-hmm. when you're driving, you know, because catfish rods, they go in the bed of the truck, hanging out the end.
Or even a boat. I mean,
and then the egg weight is sitting there jumping around, bouncing and banging off the rod, right? We don't want to knock guide ceramic rings out. We don't want to break anything. You know, that's what the coat, it's going to just take it a little bit easy on your rod and it looks cool.
It doesn't make as much noise in the bottom of an aluminum boat.
That's true. So yeah, 6-aught to 10-aught on the circle hooks, like you said.
Nailed it.
Ranging from $5 for a 10-pack and $10 for a 25-pack. So one heck of a value at the 25.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So that's like basic. If you wanted to run this in a swivel, leader line, you know, some trialing big game or something to a circle hook, that is like a classic catfishing rig on a rod and reel. And then, I mean, Josh, do you do a three-way swivel?
Sometimes. I haven't tightlined for catfish in a while. But I used to run like a Carolina rig where you have your weight on your main line, your swivel, your leader to a hook. But then I also did use a three-way. Three-way makes a little bit more sense in like when you have a little bit of current. But most of the catfishing that I've done in the past has just been in ponds. So not much current there.
Yeah. Yeah. So
circle hooks are great because they set themselves.
Yep. You don't actually need to set.
Yeah, and there's no yanking the rod to get that hook.
Put the rod to your side and just kind of pull.
You just reel. Just start reeling, and like jug lines and trot lines and stuff, the hooks, they set themselves. So they just take the bait, and they get stuck. They can't get off.
So along with the standard rig I was telling you about.
Oh, I forgot about those.
Did someone push all these in? Might have to find another one. Let's see here. But we're going to go on to stuff that Pat was talking about. Looks like, what did you say it looked like?
It looked like we're getting ready to build a airplane or something.
Model airplane. Let's see if I can get one of these pegs out here.
We've got catfish floats.
Catfish floats. So this is something that depends on how you're running. If you're running an egg weight to a single swivel, so like a barrel swivel or whatever, mm-hmm. and you're running your leader line, you would run the float between the swivel and your hook. What this is doing is getting your bait off the bottom, helping getting your bait off the bottom.
So it helps you in a no current situation.
Yeah. And then it also in current, this will, like the one that Pat's holding up, it's a pre-rigged float system.
It's got propellers and beads. It's got
a prop in there, like a little buzzbait prop looking thing, to where, so it's going to have some vibration and potentially can attract some catfish if you're using like a cut bait or something and you need to add some, some vibrations to it. There's another model with a two-blade metal propeller.
Like a prop plane.
Yeah. Almost looks like. So the standard float is something we sell. This is like kind of if you want to get into the beginning stages of this, the standard float right here. Mm-hmm. Let's say this is your leader line. You have your circle hook over here. You have a swivel right here. You're going to take your float rig and run it in between there before you tie. Now you can tie your hook. And then you take this wedge peg or, peg, and you can peg it like that. Now it sticks. So now that's going to lift your bait off the ground.
I didn't know those stuck like that. I thought they were like free floating on the line where they could slide up and down.
No, yeah, there's a peg
on here. There's a peg. Yeah.
And you can, the more you push your peg in, the more you can decide where it goes. Like if you really jam it in there, it'll stay pretty stuck. But then you can't really get the peg out. So that's like a very standard way of getting your bait off the bottom. What that does, there's a couple different things. Catfish are not necessarily always just like nose down to the mud.
Mm-hmm.
They're usually on the bottom level.
Yeah, but if you could put that bait about a foot mm-hmm. and a half yeah. off the bottom, that's yeah, like
it's
right,
gonna get right in the strike zone. I think it helps with letting the fish take the bait and not know that there's a line at the other end. If you have a taut line and they pick it up and they feel that tension, sometimes those fish will drop it. This kind of helps give it some loose line to where the fish aren't noticing it. There's some talks about not getting snagged because this is kind of helping keeping that hook off the bottom.
I can see that.
Things like that.
Especially on a three-way rig.
Yeah. And that when I'll talk about that in a second, you put that float above your swivel on the three-way. Okay, so you have your weight at the bottom.
Yeah.
You have your line going up to the three-way.
Yep.
And you have a three-way up here, and then the top of that three-way is where you put the float above it.
You peg it.
And you peg it above it, about 6 inches, I would say, above the three-way swivel.
So then it holds it straight up and down to where current mm-hmm. can take your bait. Yep.
And it just helps keep that keeps that bait and that three-way swivel off the bottom.
Yep.
So, these float are just a simple way to get these in your catfish box to keep your bait off the ground. And but then you can get to these rigs, and there's all sorts of colors. We got colors in these too. We got orange, red, yellow, or chartreuse or yellow. And then like if you're fishing where like the waves are rocking the boat and stuff, mm-hmm. sometimes that'll actually drive your weight and your hook into like structure or snags or something. This kind of helps keep that from doing that as well.
I gotcha.
Keeps that hook out of the mess where your boat's rocking and just slowly dragging all this into mess, into a stump or something. What you can add to this is the rattles. So there's another type of attractor to add to that. Right here.
Little maracas.
Yeah, that's what they look like. Let's see. There you go. You can hear that? So these basically do the same thing. You can put them, I mean, if you have bobber stops, you can put them wherever you want. Like, usually I put them, you know, semi-close to the, your bait. But if you have bobber stops, you can slide them up and down. If you don't have bobber stops, I put them between the float and the hook. But if you don't want to use a float and you want to use this, which I don't know if it'd really work, you kind of want the float to get it off the bottom and this to have, you know, any type of current, you know, to rattle around or whatever.
Huh.
So there's a little catfish floats.
I was wondering if those little rattles would work good on a jug line. I don't see why they wouldn't.
You know, maybe, you know, if you can get, if your jug line, what kind of, using braid?
I've got a mono leader.
Gotcha. Yeah. You might be able to use it on a mono leader.
So I've got my main line going down to a snap swivel, and I've got a mono running down to the weight. So I've got a special knot I tied, and I've got two of those with circle hooks. So they come off at a 90, and then it's just one piece of mono down to the weight.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, you tie this weird like little loop knot deal, and then you can attach your hook.
I've never done that three-way swivel rig, but I kind of want to try it.
I kind of want to catch a really big catfish.
You do?
Yeah. I just don't have the right, I don't have a rod and reel for that.
Oh, you don't?
I would be out there with my bass rods, and if I catch a 50-pound blue, I mean, that's going to get interesting pretty quick.
Yeah, it would. So I got, it's probably an 8-foot, medium heavy, moderate, fast, I think is probably the action. So it's a little bit light. It's not a heavy rod. It's not like a true heavy, but it's a, it's a, I think, a glass catfish rod. I don't think it's graphite. Paired up with a 7,000 Ambassador round reel. That's the ticket there with 180 to 100-pound braid, I think. So we sell a ton of Ambassador 7,000s at the store for those catfish guys.
That's the go-to?
Yeah. Some guys do buy 6,500s, but that 7,000 Ambassador is probably our most sold catfish round reel. But you can do all this on a spinning tackle too. You get into the 5,000 size, you know, spinning tackle or spinning reels. That's where you get into the catfish size.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure there's some like cheap combo catfish rods you can pick up.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some
spinning rods. That's kind of more
there's push button catfish combos.
Oh yeah.
Too.
Ooh, some Zebcos?
Oh yeah.
Ooh, I need to get me some of those.
I would
there's all sorts of different. I mean, you can
Immediately I want to sell you like on some Zebco 733 platinum all metal because you know all those Zebcos that you buy on the combos have all plastic gears and stuff, and I just feel like with if you want to go out and catch some catfish, man, you need to have some at least some brass gears in the reel.
It'd be rugged.
But, yeah.
I'll stick with the jugs for now. I'd rather catch crappie while my catfish are getting caught on jugs.
Yeah. You got to get a rod combo.
Like well, when I think of catfishing, though, that's what I think of is just chilling.
Oh, yeah.
We'll just get to about late July, and maybe I'll be wanting to get a couple catfish rods.
Yeah,
we're just hanging out with a group.
What's your favorite time of day to fish for catfish?
I'm always a night guy.
Yeah,
evening into the night.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but guys do it all day.
I was catching.
You've seen them on YouTube. They'll be out there in the middle of the day on a river.
Yep.
I mean,
the jugs that was running. I think I launched a boat at like 1 o'clock. Yeah. It's off the water by 4:30.
Oh yeah, it don't matter. They're biting all the time.
Middle of the afternoon.
So
everybody wants to eat a hot dog.
Yeah, that's the one thing. You know, I don't never really been out big river fishing for them yet.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one day.
We should run bank lines.
I didn't
That'd
do it.
Be fun.
Yeah. I didn't do it from a boat. Like some people fish big rivers off the bank. Some go off the boat. And that's the crazy thing. These tournaments now with these electronics, guys are guys are pinpointing fish like to a T. Like they're seeing, hey, that fish, I'm going to go catch this one right here, which is crazy. It's changed. I mean, in the bass side, we talk about it, but now it's even
for any.
It's changed the game. And I don't know how much LiveScope is.
We're talking about it. They're using it for snagging. You know,
they saw it snagging, but I don't
go look.
I'm curious if it's being used for like big tournament catfishing or not. I know like side imaging and all that stuff is because they're finding holes and they're finding fish because a big catfish will cast a good shadow on side imaging.
Yeah.
And they're finding holes and they're using some bumping techniques and stuff to where they're actually drifting and bumping these. I think I'm saying that right. They're drifting and bumping these baits into like the catfish's face. Like the catfish is in the hole.
They know where that fish is
cruising around and they're literally bumping this.
Take that bait and put it
right in front of his nose. And he's like, oh yeah, easy, easy dinner. Cause I went out 2 years ago on the Ozarks. I went out with a guy, who does fish tournaments. One heck of a rig. He's got the sea arc like you, but it's black light decked out, you know.
Big catfish guy.
Yeah. Tons of pole rigs in the back. I can't remember the brand of the rigs. It might have been Driftmaster or something. But it was one heck of a setup. We drove by this flat at night, and he was guessing they would be up in there, and he was running Hummingbird side imaging. And he was able to spot and start marking these fish. And he'd mark the actual fish with the unit. Just ding, 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 marking these fish as we're going by. And then he circles around, uses his graph, positions the boat where the back end is within, I don't know, maybe 100 feet or less of the marks that he did.
Gotcha.
And he's like to a T, like pinpointing all this stuff. And then he's dropping talons down, anchoring out the front. Not in that order. I think he did the front and then the talons. But, you know, and so now he knows from these marks, we're within X amount of feet from these fish, boats anchored nose and back, and then we cast out all this cut bait. And he's got like a little cut bait table off the side, all sorts of cool stuff. And then we started making bets on how quick we were going to get, you know, fish on. And I was like, 5 minutes. No, it was like 2.5 minutes.
Really?
Fish already on.
Wow.
That's how you go catfishing right there. You go find them with your side imaging and say, yep, these are the fish. This is where they're at. And go position your boat.
I mean, it's exactly what I do with crappie.
And then figure out how to, if you got spot lock, if you need to in the front or front nose anchor, and then cast right out over top. He likes the talons because he can get that boat position like, it's not moving. It's solid as a rock.
Mm-hmm.
So, pretty cool. Pretty crazy stuff.
Well, there's plenty of catfish to be had.
I need to try it.
Yeah.
I need to get out there more.
I mean, with the bass fishing, though, it's hard for me. But there's a certain time in the summer, you know, you start to get this itch. I don't know.
It's that summertime catfish vibe.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
Because it's just laid back and you know the fish are going to bite. Like bass and crappie, like they can get pretty finicky in the summer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It just gets hot.
Yeah, you know? Too.
And sometimes you just want to sit in the shade and have a tight line and just kick it, you know?
Yeah. But anyways, catfish. I mean, these all sorts of cool stuff we have. It's a fun time, I think. Just get out with some friends. Kind of lonely if you do it by yourself, but people do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get to sit there with your thoughts and whatnot and
just chill.
Enjoy the peace and quiet. Some people might really like that.
Yeah.
And they taste good, too.
Yeah.
They're good eating.
Oh, yeah.
So you've got, did you keep those, I'm assuming? Yeah, you're ready to.
Yeah, they're in the freezer right now.
Oh, yeah.
Got three catfish in the freezer.
Yep.
We got to do a fish fry soon.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh, we need to.
I mean, is there any other...
Oh, my gosh.
Maybe blackened catfish? I'm just trying to think of any other... Like, the most popular ways to eat them are deep fried.
I think deep fried catfish. Deep
fried or blackened.
Blackened,
yeah. Put a little lemon juice on top, some hot sauce. And Chandler's case, Well, fresh cut onions.
Well, it's fried.
Oh,
too.
Yeah.
You can do different with catfish po' boys. Or,
remember when we were in Oklahoma and you had the all you can eat catfish?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You weren't there for that, Pat, were you?
You didn't all you can eat catfish?
Yeah.
Did they go bankrupt?
Almost.
I tried my best.
I think that's what they're three orders of catfish.
That's what they're inflating the Red Lobster.
Dude, I want to go back to that place. I can't remember what town that was in.
It's somewhere in Oklahoma.
It was close to Henrietta, Oklahoma. And because we were down visiting G&H at the time. And I found this place that had all you can eat catfish. I was like, I trust this place.
It was pretty good.
And it was amazing.
Just baskets, like catfish chunks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and there's.
I think, weren't there strips? Weren't they?
Like, yeah, they're full fillets.
Quarter strips. I don't know if they're full fillets. I don't know if they're cut in half. I don't know. It might have been full fillets. But I was telling them, like, a lot of people eat, like, they just ring an onion on top of the filleted catfish and right in the mouth, and it's the best.
You can do tacos.
But then I do like a lot of Louisiana Gold is my preferred hot sauce.
Is that what we had in Iowa?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Dude, we had catfish up in Iowa at the Deer Classic.
Louisiana Gold. I'd never had it.
It was. Would we have catfish bites or something?
Yeah.
They were just, they had.
It's like chicken nuggets, but catfish.
It was chicken nuggets, but catfish. I think a fast food restaurant should get into this.
Fish bites.
Like catfish bites.
Does Long John Silver's have it?
I don't know.
Does anybody ever eat there?
I don't know.
Any of you guys ever eaten at Long John Silver's?
I have.
Yeah.
I've never eaten one.
I don't think I've ever been there.
My favorite part was the crispy batter that fell off in the bottom of your little.
I'm just surprised those places are open. I don't know anybody who chooses to go to Long John Silver's.
Yeah, my favorite part about Long John Silver's is driving right past it.
Yeah. I like eating at the A&W that's attached to it.
Actually, Captain D's was my preferred.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jumpin' Catfish is good. They do some catering.
And Captain D's used to do a Sunday special, and it was so much, but you got unlimited.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, one more thing I want to say is I just bought an electric fillet knife at the store.
Which one did you get?
The Mr. Twister.
Oh, the old classic, the classic Mr. Twister.
The green one.
Oh, yeah.
The old Twister
clean,
Mister.
Cleaning fish yesterday. I set up this folding table in my garage. And yep. Done. It makes such a big difference having an electric fillet knife. I've never filleted a catfish. I used to always skin them.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah, pretty easy. Oh, you just do it normal, like a crappie. You didn't go in from the top and do the whole dissection and everything.
Nail the catfish up to a tree and then pull the skin to
them. Oh, yeah.
Those catfish weren't big enough. I mean, they were just eater size. You know, get a couple fillets.
You know, where was I at? I was camping at a lake somewhere, and I pulled up. We camped next to this guy. Yeah, I think he was down in Texas. This guy, I think he survived off catfish, and you pulled up next to him and he had this tree just had hanging catfish heads from it where he's, I think, skinned and then.
Oh, and some of those flathead guys, when they get a big one, they nail it to a fence post.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So
the head anyways.
Yeah.
At my catfish tree.
Yep. I mean, it's such a great, great thing to eat.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll go to Cracker Barrel and get breakfast with a catfish fillet because that is offered and it is awesome.
Let's go to the fish market.
You're making me hungry.
Where can we get catfish right here?
There's a Cracker Barrel right down the
street. There's a Cracker Barrel right down the street.
Hey, isn't there an oyster thing?
Yeah. I see that driving to work every day. I don't know what's that all about.
It's all you can eat oysters on like Tuesday or something.
Yeah I'm out.
In Kansas City?
Yeah,
I don't know.
No, I don't know about that one. We just don't get that kind of seafood around here.
Yeah,
like
the fish market's pretty good.
Yeah,
is it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
It
trust
used to
it.
Be a fish market.
Yeah,
I eat more seafood when I'm on the coast.
I get it, but a lot of them fly it in. It's not like they're. I mean, it's pretty fresh.
Yeah, well, that's good.
I don't think they're.
And in that place, you're not eating tuna, sushi or something. You're eating catfish,
right?
What other type of fish they got there?
Yeah, Stroud's got a good catfish.
Oh, they do, don't they?
Yeah, 54th Street, but I don't think they do it anymore. The catfish called Wanda.
They did change their menu, didn't they?
I think they got rid of it. My mom was disappointed. But Stroud's, Stroud's pretty good. A little pan-fried catfish.
Yeah. How about you just go catch it and then clean it and then cook it?
Exactly.
Okay, Dash.
All right. Well, it's lunchtime.
Yep.
I'm thinking catfish right now, but I don't know if that's going to be an option.
Like and subscribe, my peeps.
Yeah.
Keep supporting us. I appreciate it. Be safe out there. Enjoy the upcoming week, the weekend, and
go get a line wet.
Go get a line wet.
Go catch fishing some time. Catfish.
Hopefully, you enjoyed Mother's Day, and we will see you all next time.
Yep. Peace. It's time for me to go.